there has to be alternative means to pay their home members, and we are giving all buses they can pick up on. So they have to drop members, go back with others, and so on. That is the cost of our delay. Otherwise, this is a very difficult moment. We only try by all means. Let me greet Umalusi as a person. I'm happy that you have managed to come, notwithstanding the short notice that you were given. There were changes in the program of the NCOP, and we took advantage of the fact that we are no longer having a local government week, but we said we are not going to sit and fold our arms. We are not used to sitting and sleeping. We are used to working at this position. And I'm very grateful that it is obliged. You could have extended an excuse as to say that in terms of the program, we are not featuring now. But you did oblige, because we are partners in working hard to take South Africa forward. Thank you very much. I do want to say thank you for it. It's not that we are taking you for granted, but we are looking at the program and seeing the pressure of work that we have and the need for us to finish the work while off. This is the last year of this parliament. So we must do everything and try to wind off so as to hand over to the next committee after election. And more so, next year being the election year, we don't have much of time to spend in parliament. We need to go to the constituency so that you can be able to live and sustain as entities of our department. We are converging for the purposes of looking at your APP as very important entities. Umalusi being a quality assurer, ensuring that the quality of education that we give our nation is up to standard, up to required standard. And you are not working all on your own, you are working also with the other quality assurance, SAQA, and other quality assurance to ensure that we keep the standard. And you benchmark yourself in terms of the standards that you see also in other countries that we seek to achieve as South Africa. We do not want to be looked at as a country where the standards of your people is low. That is why we should ensure that what the teacher delivers in this classroom is up to the quality that we seek to achieve as a country. In the main, you are there for quality assurance. And very important, the certification that we issue, the currency. What is the currency of our certificate? The curriculum that you dispense. It is the kind of a curriculum that is synergized in terms of the requirements of the nation at this point in time for economic transformation. The curriculum is the curriculum that we are discussing, talking to those issues. Are we meeting the targets of the NDP and all this? Those are the issues that we need to put in mind as we develop our APP, the MTSF, the threat plan of the department, and so on. Say, very important body also in terms of ensuring that the teachers are registered. After being registered, there is ongoing teacher development. And they are ethics that are observed, the conduct and the moral of the teachers in the profession. And removing them from the teaching profession if they are not fit to handle the children. We are going to sit as a committee to listen to the stories that are going to tell us. Of how many teachers are you removing from the system because they are harassing, sexually harassing students and so on, or still practicing corporal punishment and things like that. So so we really are looking at you as very important bodies attached to the Department of Education, both higher and basic education. I'm happy that there are officials from the Department of Basic Education that are responsible for you. They are going to introduce themselves so that we take the process forward in that manner. We are, and how we are going to use your budget, both of you, how we are going to dispense your budget, as you fill in the vacancies, what is the vacancy rate, are the boards functional, and so on. Those are the issues. And what targets, as you said, are those targets achievable? Let me take this opportunity to introduce myself, who I'm Mrs. Swanley, just to refresh, who has met you before. But I think it's years ago, we don't meet you every financial year. I am Mrs. Swanley, the chairperson of Education and Education in the Eastern Center of Education. I will allow our honorable members to introduce themselves.
Jovela, I can have a man of Eddie Mamburu, which is a name of a friend.
Molini, the Kinder, as some Gomele Pondo, Len Puma Pondoni, Minas of Council of Provinces, who are in Lumo, Laleco.
Molini, the Utandi Mpambo Tsugwana, the Mele Pondo, Len Jonah Colony, Western Cape, the Walilum Laleco Mitty, the Cocala Monsan.
Good morning, honourable members and everyone present in the meeting. Many times of culture and the committee secretary. Thank you.
We then introduce ourselves right now.
Good morning. My name is Walter Laisi. I'm a member of the Sixth Council.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Ella Mukhalani from Sixth. I'm the chief executive officer.
My name is Maurice Mapilane, Chief Financial Officer, SAIS.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mafu Rakomedzi. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Umadusi.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is John Bonick. I'm the Chairperson of Umadusi.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Darren Simeche, from Umalusi Strategic Planning. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable chair and honourable members. My name is Rufus Polia, and I'm the chief director responsible for national assessment and public exams in the Department of Basic Education.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Philip Giacomo, Director of Teacher Development in DBE.
Good morning, Chairperson members and colleagues. My name is Lindumzi Komle. I'm a college advisor for the community. Thank you very much.
Good morning, honorable members. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Tabele Keke, the Koning Advisor for Social Services.
Questions, if members have got questions or comments, whatever the case may be.
I will have a move. I would have comments by both the CEO and the Chairperson of the Commission. Maybe the Chairperson can start off by making comments, and then the CEO will continue with the presentation. Then I think that's the discussion.
No, thanks, Chair. The Chairperson is not available. We want to take this opportunity to thank you for granting us an opportunity to come and meet with the NCOP. We do have an answer to all the questions you raised, Chair, around what we should be presenting today. And the CEO will proceed to do that. I think our presentation is quite a full presentation that will try to address some of the issues that you raised. And we have not come here in a long time, and we are happy to be here today. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will be focusing on the strategic plan and also the annual performance plan for 2018-19, and the CFO will continue with the budget as well.
Sorry, before you begin, allocating you
25%. Thank you. In terms of our presentation outline, as you can see, we will give you just an overview, but also focus on our vision and mission, our values in terms of our strategic plan, and obviously move to our five programs that we are delivering for the 2018-19 financial year, and then conclude with the 2018-19 budget as well.
And so
yes,
I think it would be doing injustice to the program, because according to the agenda, we didn't present a
thank you. Thank you very much. I forgot that aspect of it. I'm sorry. The formal apologies that have received with the Secretary is Honorable Hatim. Is not well. Honorable Mbuenya has apologized for the reason. Honorable Stock also is said not to be well. Honorable Kaula complained about the fact that he did not get notification of the meeting in time. I don't know what happened, because I know that in the emails that are sent, the names of all the members of the committee are there. Those are the apologies that I received. Committee whip and other member too. Thank you, can continue. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. maybe just to start by indicating the person that the minister appointed the new council in August 2017, and their term of office is from 2017 until 2021. So it is the same in your council. And let me say that we are moving into a bigger process of professionalizing the education professionals. And one of the things that Council did, the new one, was to take stock and say, if that is the bigger vision that we are having, therefore we need to look into our priorities for the next coming term of office, so that we can look at some of the core deliverables that we want to make sure that we achieve, but also make sure that we have a necessary enabling position that will make sure that those things are delivered. And one of the areas that I've already indicated in terms of the core deliverables for the 2017-2018 to 2020-21 in terms of the new council is the one to make sure that we really, really professionalize the profession, because there are so many things that are going on that we haven't really taken care of, and I think as I go along we'll be able to see them. But secondly, to make sure that we have evidence-based and data-driven advisors. The same Act requires us to be advising the minister
both the Minister of Education and Minister of Higher Education and Training, and therefore, for us to be able to do that effectively, we need to make sure that it's based on research, research is based on data, based on evidence. Obviously, Council also looked at the issue of improved ICT and also strengthened advocacy and communication within the entire teaching profession, but also to strengthen the capacity within the organization. Because if we can have a good plan, we can have a good vision, but if we don't have the necessary kind of human capital that will be able to deliver the strategy, we won't be able to do that. Also move towards making sure that we are present in the 9 provinces. Currently, we have offices, one in KwaZulu-Natal, and the second one in Free State. And we are busy opening the next 3 in Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and Singapore. And in the next financial year, obviously, we'll move into the rest of the country. So that's the next slide does show you, in terms of the bigger vision of professionalizing the teaching profession, those are the 10 or 12 different areas that Council is focusing on, in terms of making sure that we do have professional teaching standards, we determine the criteria of entry into initial teacher education. We haven't, as a sector, really defined the kind of a teacher that we want to be coming into the teaching profession, and therefore, we are working closely with the 25 higher education institutions to see what kind of a teacher do you want to see? What are some of the attributes? What are some of the outcomes that you want to see when that teacher comes into initial teacher education and graduate? Obviously, we are also saying we need to move towards registering student teachers as well from first year of teaching instead of waiting for the final year and doing it at the end. Because as they go to teaching practice, they engage with learners, and we are beginning to see a trend where some of them fall into the trap of issues of sexual harassment of learners and all that. And therefore, we need to make sure that we have jurisdiction over that. And we are working closely with the Department of Basic Education to introduce a mandatory induction, so that when they graduate, they don't just come to the place for registration, they get inducted first. And obviously, the issue of professional re-registration. Currently, if you're an educator, you registered once in a while, 19-something, and you still have that certificate. So we're moving towards the issue of re-registration and making sure that we retain and maintain that particular membership. In terms of our strategy, in the current strategic plan, that is obviously will be coming to an end, as we correctly indicated, the term of office is coming to an end as a country, but currently, this is our vision and mission that we are reflecting there without necessarily going into it. And our values, again, in terms of that particular strategic plan, one is around service-oriented, organization, ensure quality, deals with the issues of openness and transparency, but also, most importantly, ensure that there is professionalism within the sector. The next slide is just explaining some of the strategic outcome orientated goals that we have, and those are aligned with the 5 programs that we have in the 2018-19 annual performance plan. For example, one is issues of maintaining an updated register of all qualified educators and make sure that we have sub-registers of special categories. And secondly, to set and maintain ethical standards and process complaints, improved participation in continuing professional development that you've just spoken about, and maybe just to also clarify that essays, our role in continuing professional development is not to provide. We are not providing continuing professional development. The Department of Basic Education, as that the government has already indicated, and the 9 provinces have got a responsibility to provide. All that we are doing is to manage that particular uptake of professional development and be in a position to monitor it and be able to say to what an extent is what teachers are doing responding to the national priorities in terms of teaching professional development, so that we are clear in terms of the role. And obviously, the issue of enhancing teacher professional leadership. Our mandate is aligned, obviously, to the National Development Plan in terms of Chapter 9. There are three distinct areas that are mentioned in the NDP. One, in terms of state playing prominent role with the professional standards, but secondly, making sure that we quality assure the provisioning of continuing professional development. Hence, we have a responsibility to approve all the providers that are offering continuing professional development, but secondly, to endorse the participation in professional development. From the MCSF 2014-2019 in terms of output number one, and also in terms of the DBHM plan to 2019, we are aligned to goal number 16, and specifically to DBE program number 3 in terms of the annual performance plan. From the state act, and I think you've said it already, Honorable Chairperson, that we have a mandate to register all the practicing teachers in the country from both public and independent schools. And just recently, the Department of Higher Education and Training has brought back the TVET sector into the so that we can also do that particular sector. And secondly, the issue of promoting ethical standards, promoting professional standards, and making sure that we manage professional development. Our integrated strategic training framework on teacher education is also key to us in terms of the role that we are playing in quality assuring our quality management of continuing professional development, but also the issue of professional standards. National Policy Framework on Teacher Education is giving us a full mandate in terms of us managing the system for continuing professional development. And if you remember very well, Section 53 of that particular policy is saying, as such, we need to be managing and implementing the CPTD system, and we will be receiving the resources from the Department of Education. And indeed, that money is coming from the Department of Education in terms of delivering that money. And lastly, the NPF Act, in terms of us as a professional council being recognized by us. The sub-programs, one, we have registration, purpose and key functions, I won't go to them, but just to indicate that in terms of our unaudited numbers, as at the 1st March 2018, our register of educators is sitting at 562,483 educators. Remember, it includes both public and independent, plus office-based educators that are in the department, the rank provincial education department. And we also registered during the previous financial year 4,087 new registered educators, but also we've updated in terms of provisional registration 45,454. So therefore, during the 17-18 financial year, we had 79,541 educators that we registered. Our target for 2018-19, we're looking at registering 38,000 new educators in the new coming financial year, and also updating in terms of provisional registration 27,000 educators. We, in the next slide, dividing them in terms of the four quarters. And we are generally reviewing and reconceptualizing the whole registration process. One of the things that we are doing is to really do away with the on-spot registration because of the fraudulent qualifications that are coming in. So we felt we will incrementally start introducing that on-the-spot registration so that we can deal with, give ourselves time to deal with vetting, to deal with verification, which for us, we don't necessarily want to call it that because it looks like we are we do not have direct mandates to be debating and verifying, and therefore we're infusing that into our registration criteria. And for us as a professional council, it will be looking at professional business practice rather than vetting in a true sense of ways. But what we've done is to was to conceptualize that business practice. And out of that, there are three different DRN processes that we'll be bringing in. One is the issue of criminal records from the SAPS. And secondly, it will be the issue of determining suitability to work with children, clearance. Obviously, you can only do that through the National Register, Child Protection Register from the Department of Social Development. And thirdly, it will be the clearance from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development Sexual Offenders Register, in line with the Sexual Offences Act of 2009. But council took a resolution that we must phase this process in incrementally, as we are starting from the 1st of January with the issue of looking at the CNR certificate from the SSPS, so that we can deal with the issue of vetting and verification very well. In terms of the verification of qualifications, because we register more of the newly qualified educators than your practicing educators, we have started a pilot in the five universities, in two in KZN, two in Free State, and one in Limpopo, mainly because we've got the two state offices in those two provinces. The process that we are following is to register all the final year students and to request the universities to give us the results in December, January, so that during the graduation ceremony, we are able to welcome the student teachers officially, the newly qualified that are graduating, officially into the profession and hand out those certificates on the spot during the graduation ceremony. We've already started, and the first one was on the 27th March at the Central University of Technology in Bloemfontein. And universities and also the Education Youth Forum are really excited about that, because student teachers are not struggling with the certificate, but we are also able to welcome them on the spot into the profession. We are also moving into online registration system and also making sure that we register those student teachers from first year. The second program, which is ethics, which is dealing with the issues, Chair, that you were talking about, during 2016-17, if you check our annual report, we declared the backlog that we had in terms of the cases that we were dealing with, and it was around 248. But by now, we've managed to put in systems to make sure that we hear it. And currently, we're having 91 out of that 248. And secondly, for the 27, and I'm talking about the 2017-18 unaudited figures, which will come into the annual report later on. 2017-18 new cases received were 510. We considered 327, and we left with 183. The target for 18-19, there are two indicators. One, in terms of making sure that we advocate the code of professional ethics to the teachers, and we're looking at 10,000. And the number of cases to be considered in the next financial year, we're looking at 550. And I'll also explain why we still remaining with those numbers, despite the fact that we continue to have backlog. I've indicated that we've managed to work on the backlog to a certain extent. We've put in systems in place in terms of increasing the financial resources for ethics, so that those backlogs that we are having could be cleared. But we also had a business review process that was giving us some an indication in terms of where the bottlenecks are in terms of dealing with the cases. And out of that particular process, we have a new institutional or organizational structure that we will begin to have, and that will inform the job evaluation process that we are having at the moment, so that we can have more capacity inside in terms of dealing with the cases than we are having currently, including the panelists that we are using from outside. So all those issues have been looked into by the new council, and processes are being put in place so that during the 18-19 financial year, we can minimize the whole process of having backlogs and be able to deal with the cases accordingly. We are also working closely with the Commission on Gender Equality, because the issues of sexual violence are very critical to us. Council has prioritized all the cases in the country that are reported to us with regard to sexual offences or sexual violence issues. And also the Commission on Gender Equality agreed that we can utilize their hotline in terms of reporting those cases, and they will just transfer those to us. The next slide is just giving you an indication in terms of the number of reported sexual offences cases over the last 5 years. And you can see that we had 514 all in all. And the three provinces that are highlighted here, KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, and Western Cape, if you, from face value, it looks like at least most of these things are happening in those provinces. It's not necessarily the case. It's because those three provinces are reporting far much better than all other provinces. And we're trying to make sure that the others follow the same. The 17-18 reported sexual violence cases were 72. And you can see from the numbers again, we're still having the same trend of Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and Western Cape reporting most of the cases than other provinces. I've indicated that council is prioritizing these issues, and we're also looking into whether are we having a rise in these cases, or is it an issue of people becoming aware and reporting more. And I'm happy because the KZN in particular, from the Premier's office, from the MEC's office, they are taking this matter seriously, because the highest number generally of cases of sexual misconduct are coming from KZN, and the Premier is working closely with us, including the MEC, in terms of making sure that we have a model that we can utilize to deal with offences and also replicated in the other 9 provinces. I have attached a research report that we did on factors and environmental factors that enhance sexual offences within the school. And you can see some of the issues that are coming from the report is around issues of most of our teachers taking an advantage of our poor communities. It's about the issue of culture. It's about your 35 to 50 year old teachers. It's about issues of space in terms of those teachers that have got laboratories, that have got office space. They are doing those things in those offices because of space. And it's about also those that are colluding amongst themselves as teachers, but also between teachers and parents. And also the issue of your arts and culture educators who've got access to these learners after school hours. So generally the trends are around those particular areas. But we are also saying most of them have got double personality in character. And unfortunately, they are the best teachers who are teaching the best subject like your science math. And in most cases, the principal will cry and say, this is the only teacher that I have in terms of math, can't be only teacher. But the research has revealed some of those factors. Continuing professional teacher development system,
is the biggest program that we have, also because it's being funded directly from fiscal. Is the one that I was indicating that from the National Policy Framework on Teacher Education, and also says that it's giving us the mandate to get financial resources from fiscal. We have about 6 indicators on that one. The first one being the number of practicing educators who are still signing up for participation in the CPGD system. We're targeting 50,000 because this is the fourth year that we've been signing teachers up. And we are also monitoring the extent at which they are participating in self-initiated professional development, school-initiated professional development, and also externally initiated by the providers, approved providers, and also the employers in the department. With that one, we've got 50,000 post level one teachers as well. The number of teachers who engage in 3 types of professional development activities, I've already indicated the 3 types and the targets that we've already also assigned. Remember, teachers are supposed to participate in the CPTD system in terms of the 3 types. Teacher initiated. Continuing professional teacher development system. The continuing professional teacher development system. In terms of the requirements, teachers are supposed to participate in 3 types. 1, self-initiated, as I've already indicated. 2, the school initiated. And 3, the externally initiated. And we've got the targets in terms of what we are expecting in the next financial year. They participate in those 3 activities over a cycle of 3 years. And they are supposed to earn 150 points over a cycle of 3 years. And we are tracking in terms of the indicator how many are managing to acquire those 150 points and be able to satisfy the CPTD system requirements. And the last 2 are more on approval of professional development providers and also the endorsement of professional development activities. So we are looking at 750 new professional development activities that will come into place for evaluation and endorsement and also allocation of professional development funds. And we are also looking at 150 in terms of the number of new professional development providers that will be approved by this. Then the next 2 slides are just giving you the quarterly breakdown in terms of those indicators. In the we've also had a conference that was reviewing the last 10 years of the implementation of the CPTD. Remember, the policy framework came in 2007, and we started implementing in 2013. So we had to take stock with all the provincial stakeholders, with all the 9 provincial education departments, DBE, and everybody, just to assess. And one of the things that we are beginning to see, there's a culture of continuing professional development that is beginning to come into play. However, we're still having a challenge with regards to teachers getting used to participating and reporting to this. If they do not report to this, you will not know the extent at which they are satisfying the 115 points that are required. And one of the areas that we are working hard on is to make sure that we find a way of advocating strongly that culture of reporting that participation. We are giving you the slides in terms of just an indication of how many are participating. If you check the next slide with the graph, it gives you a national picture that we have 234,925. If you can just check the slide in the back, the one that I've reflected on the screen. This particular process is able to show us through the business intelligence tool how the provinces are doing, but also nationally you can see it's also confirming the issue of the aging teaching profession. It's also giving us, in terms of those circles, how many educators are. You can see the biggest one, the brown one. The majority of our teachers in the system have been in the system for more than 6 years. And then the other circles are showing you others that are within 6 to 12 months and and also you can see the race, the gender, and all other factors. I did not include the ones on the qualifications. It would have been interesting to also see those in terms of the qualifications that they have and also the subjects that they are teaching. We've also tried to show you a province in terms of Eastern Cape, Free State also, again, the number of teachers that are there, KZN, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Northern Cape are the three provinces that are still struggling at the moment that is trying to give support more than the others. Mpumalanga is doing extremely well compared to all of them. Northwest also. Northern Cape, we still at around just below 50%. Western Cape is doing fairly well. And also the system is able to compare to say, we're giving the provinces regular feedback to say, in the last time that you were here, you were at this, and now you are at this level. And we can be able to give them the comparison to say, you are not moving, or you are moving, because the feds and the grass will be able to show them. Also, we are able to even go to district level and give them the feds in terms of district level. And I've given an example of the Cape Winelands in terms of where they are with regards to the CPTD system. When we were introducing this system, we introduced it in terms of the three different cohorts. First cohort, it was the principals and deputy principals, so that you can also track them in terms of their own professional development. The second cohort was your school head of department. The third one was, I think there's a mistake there, it was the post level one teacher. So that as we go along, we can be able to see the extent at which each cohort is able to participate. This slide that I have on the screen is also showing the extent at which your principals and deputy principals are reporting to state with regard to their continuing professional development. It's not saying whether professional development is happening or not. It's more about them reporting to us and being able to see. The big cycle, red cycle, will tell you those that are participating, reporting, but are failing to reach 150 points over a cycle of 3 years. And the silver will be those that are exceeding your normal 150 points. In 2009, the gold will be the 300 and above. And the second cohort also gives you a picture with regard to the school head of department. And the last one with regard to your post level one indicator. So we are looking generally at the 2016-17 annual report, which we did not present to you, but we just felt there were to inform you that there was about three indicators that were a little bit weak, and managed to put systems into place to make sure that we really make sure that things are moving with regard to those two indicators. And I think one of the other things that we are doing is to send SMS at least once a year, giving all the teachers that are participating in the system an report to say, this is where you are, these are the kind of activities that you reported on,
you need to make sure that you move or you are fine or reflect on what you've already done. With issues, the first three, remember the three cycles, gold, bronze, and silver. Once the 3 years has elapsed, we give them the certificate according to their performance. So with issues, so the first cohort, which is your first and the because we have a one-off registration at the moment, one of the things that we are doing is to try and link up this system, continuing professional teacher development system, with re-registration, so that if you satisfy the requirements for the CPTD system, we can be in a position to, in the next coming 3 years, issue a certificate for re-registration. Currently, it's one-off. Even if you struck off a teacher, you can struck off the teacher, but that teacher might be in Limpopo, Mpumalanga or whatever, still holding the certificate. Because it does not have the time frame. But with this new model, it will have a time frame to say you are registered between this year and this year. Even if you can run away, it will show that the certificate has been lost. But currently, if you are an teacher, you know, you registered 19 something, and you still have that particular certificate. So we are looking at the issue of re-registration, whether we should do it 3 years as per the CPTD system, or we should follow the National Development Plan, which is proposing certification every 5 years. But we are consulting with the teaching profession in terms of how to deal with that. Program number 4 is on professional standards. One of the indicators is setting professional practice standards for teaching, and we are saying, because it's more of a qualitative indicator, not quantitative, we want to see those standards approved and gazetted by the end of the financial year. The second one on monitoring would not happen in 2018-19 because we will not be having the standards. As indicated earlier on, that one of the requirements in terms of the NPF Act is for things to be, like all other professional centers in the country, recognized by SACWA. And one of the requirements for that recognition is that we must develop professional designations for teachers. Like with accountants, you have all accountants, but you've got chartered accountants that are certified and have a designation. So it's something that the NPF Act is requiring us to do. So we are beginning to develop that together with the SACWA in terms of them supporting us. And we want to see 2018-19 producing the first designation for teachers. But obviously we'll have to consult in terms of how to, or what to call that particular designation. And what will be the implications if you have the designation or not. We have developed the, in terms of the first indicator, the professional standards, which we are consulting currently in the teaching profession. There are 10 of them, as reflected in the slide. We've been consulting throughout 17-18 financial year with the teachers, with the stakeholders, with the office-based educators, and we are revising them in line with the feedback that we've received, so that by the end of the financial year, we can release them to the teaching profession for implementation. Part of the other process during the financial year will be for the minister to gather them for public comment. So that process is on track. And I think I've already at the beginning explained the teacher professionalization part. Remember when I said we need to define the criteria for recruitment into initial teacher education and make sure that all student teachers are registered until we go up to 8 in terms of coming up with periodic re-registration. This process also is part of the professional standards program, and we are again consulting with the teaching profession on it. We are field testing or piloting it so that before we have full implementation, we can be in a position to know that we are on track.
The last program is on policy and research. The number of research reports produced in the space, research policy and agenda, we're looking at three. And also, we've got a responsibility, as I've indicated earlier on, to advise the minister. We're looking at issue policy briefs, and we're looking also at the number of provincial practitioner-based research conferences and seminars based on the research that is already conducted. We're looking at two. We are working at establishing the virtual library for people so that they can access it through the website in terms of various resources that can assist them. And that the concept paper on that should be approved in terms of the kind of structure that you want to put in place in the financial recovery. And for that particular process to happen, like I've already indicated, this program, it needs the policy and research agenda to be strengthened. And also, I've spoken about making sure that we have advisory that is evidence-based, that is data-driven, for us to advise the minister as well. Thanks, Jan. I'll put your hands over to the CFO just to give you the guidance.
Thanks, Chair. It will be very short. Our council is funded mainly by its members through payment of membership fee or subscription fee. That's the main source of funding. In addition to that, in terms of the continuing professional teacher development system, the Department of Education apply from the fiscals on our behalf to get funding. So we are guaranteed to be funded up to 2021 in terms of the approval that we have obtained. That makes that subsidy to be guaranteed for now. So in looking at how the council was performing, the council realized that it was scaling down in terms of its mandatory functions due to the rising cost, operating costs. So last year, it increased its levies effective from November from 120 per educator per annum to 180, which increased its budget from 72 million to 103 million per annum. The aim was simply to improve the delivery levels of mandatory functions, as the CEO has explained what the council intend to do in the coming year and the 2 years to come. The other aim, which in terms of trying to improve the delivery of this main mandate, came the issue of taking the services closer to the clients which we serve, the educators, where we come up with increasing the number of presidential offices that we have. The additional three at the moment will be Western Cape, Limpopo, and Eastern Cape. The process is underway to finalize the office facilities. The first option that the council opted for was to purchase the buildings because rental against purchase in areas like Cape Town. Rental within 2 years would have paid a purchase price of a building. So we have sent out a bid. That process is underway. So in case the bids, the purchase delays, will rent for a short period while we continue looking for the building. So in all these three provinces, we intend buying the buildings, because in case of any change, you can still have the value for your money. So those provincial offices, where we intend to start them somewhere around, they will start operating from October, if everything goes well. In our budget, Chair, the budget included the submission of the cost involved in establishing these three additional three provincial offices. One thing that I want to add is that we picked up our slow pace in handling the misconduct cases. Towards the last quarter of 2018, we allocated an additional 2 million for the purpose of clearing these cases, which we realized that they were taking longer. You had the CEO indicated, showed you the slide which showed the number of cases. So that process is being concluded now, came to this current financial year. We didn't finish all of them in March. So we'll be also clearing that backlog during the first half of 2019. Chair, let me say that in short, the budget, in case of any clarification, we'll give the details. All the numbers are there. We hope that the council will fulfill its mandatory functions, and the budget is sufficient to do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me hand over to the Ministry, starting with the comments from the Chairperson of Council, Professor Bolmich, then the presentation will follow together.
Well, thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Mrs. Zwane, also Honourable Members of the Select Committee, good morning. I just want to point out that the presentation obviously will be done by three people. Dr. Mafu Rakumetsi, who is the CEO, he will start, and then he will be followed by Mrs. Stella Mosime, who is the senior manager in the office of the CEO. We also have Mr. Dumisani Malule here today. He's a senior manager for finance and supply chain management. The CFO, Mr. Jacqueline Rousseau, is not available today. So Mr. Malule will be doing the presentation. Sufficient to say, Honourable Members and Chair, we are delighted to be given the opportunity to report the work of Umalusi to the Select Committee on Education and Recreation with reference to the annual performance plan and the budget for 2018 and 2019 financial year. It has been pointed out before that the role of Umalusi is to discharge its fiduciary duty, as the chairperson has indicated, in relation to organizational performance, governance, and financial management. I'm pleased to report, Honorable Chair, that to this end, Umalusi has made massive strides in meeting its legislative, governance, and financial mandate. Failure to achieve our goals in these three critical areas would have made it impossible for Council to discharge its fiduciary duty as commissioned by the Honourable Minister of Basic Education. I would like to bring to the attention of the Select Committee that the term of the current Council is about to come to an end. So the term of office of the current Council started on the 7th of June 2014 and will officially end on the 7th of June 2018, that's 2 months. This is therefore the last annual performance plan and budget presentation that this council will make to the committee, this particular council. I would also like to take this opportunity to express my heartfelt gratitude to the Minister of Basic Education for entrusting me with the huge responsibility of leading the Umalusi Council over the past 4 years. I couldn't have done it, however, without the relentless support of capable men and women who served so diligently in the Umalusi Council. And together we achieved a lot in the past 4 years, and I have no doubt that the contribution made by the Council will go a long way in adding to the achievement of the goals set in the National Development Plan. Without wasting time, Honourable Chair, please allow me to extend a word of appreciation to the following people, the two ministers, of the education sector, namely the Honourable Minister Angie Motshekga, and the three Honourable Ministers who held the higher education portfolio, namely Dr. Blade Nzimande, Professor Shlengiwe Mkhize, and now Ms. Naledi Pandor. The Select Committee on Education and Recreation, under the chairpersonship of the Honourable Lungelwa Zwani, we would also like to express our gratitude to you. To all the council members, to all the members of the various committees of council, and to all Umalusi staff, the executive management, under the capable leadership of the CEO, Dr. Mafu Rakometsi, we thank them all. I will now give over to Dr. Rakometsi to lead the presentation, and we look forward to the engagement with the Honourable Member. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Volmink. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members of the Select Committee on Education and Recreation. We appreciate the opportunity of coming to present our annual performance plans in terms of their targets, and also presenting the budget to this Honourable Committee. The presentation I'm going to share with Mr. Lamsimehi and Mr. Dumisan Maluleke, it's going to focus on the role of Umalusi. We are going to summarize the mandate of the organization. We are going to look at the updated situational analysis, looking at the performance delivery environment and organizational environment. We are going to look at the revisions to legislative and other mandates. We are going to look at program purpose, objectives, performance indicators and targets. That's what we're going to be looking at. We are a quality council responsible for qualifications that are registered on the General and Further Education and Training Qualifications Framework, on the National Qualifications Framework, NQF. We've got a 10-level NQF, and we share the space with the Council on Higher Education and the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations, and the coordinator, which is an apex body, is the South African Qualifications Authority. These are sister organizations. The Umalusi Council ensures that the providers of education and training have the capacity to deliver and assess qualifications and learning programs, and that they do so to the expected standards of quality. Our mandate is derived from two acts of parliament, the first one being the National Qualifications Framework Act, number 67 of 2008, and the General and Further Education and Training Quality Assurance Act, acronymed GENFEQA Act, number 58 of 2001, amended in 2008 to be in line with the National Qualifications Framework Act. Our mandate gives us the opportunity to develop and manage a sub-framework of qualifications in collaboration with the South African Qualifications Authority. Whatever qualification we develop, we have to register it with the South African Qualifications Authority. And we also have to ensure that there is synergy between what Umalusi does with what the two other quality councils are doing, namely the Council on Higher Education and the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations. We do this supported by the necessary quality assurance policies and processes. We also develop and implement the necessary quality assurance policies in respect of quality assurance of provision. We maintain a database of learner achievement and related matters. In other words, all learners who get their qualifications through us, we keep a database thereof in order for us to authenticate the qualifications with the higher education institutions, with the employers, and so forth and so on. And we also submit such data in a format determined in consultation with the South African Qualifications Authority, SAQA, for recording on the NLRD, National Learner Records Database, NLRD. We commission and publish research related to the development and implementation of staff framework of qualifications. This we do in order to be able to
advise the two ministers of education on matters related to the general and further education and training sub-framework of qualifications. We collaborate with USAQA. We work very closely with USAQA. We work very closely with the other quality councils in terms of the NQF. The NQF has made an arrangement where I serve in the board of SAQA and where I serve in the councils of the Council on Higher Education and the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations. And the CEOs of those institutions in turn also serve in the Council of Umalusi. This is to ensure synergy and collaboration between the different organizations in the NQF space. Our mandate is also to do advocacy of the SAF framework and its qualifications. We have to keep the South African public informed about the development on our SAF framework. What do we have on the next slide, where we have a diagram, is a summary of what I've just said. Let me just quickly take you through that. Umalusi is in the center. We develop and manage and maintain the general and further education training qualification SAF framework. We develop policies for quality assurance processes. We issue certificates. We verify the authenticity of those certificates. We conduct research and we manage a learner records database. And we also advise the two ministers of education on all pertinent issues of quality assurance. I'm going to, with your permission, Honorable Chair, hand over to Mr. Lamsimehi to go on with the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members, and thank you for handing over to me. I'm taking you through the annual assessment plan for 2017-18, the year that has just ended, and the part that the CEO just elaborated on in terms of that diagram is what we find in part A of the annual performance plan, where we just needed to reiterate the mandate of the organization so that we can put into context all the deliverables, the indicators, the objectives that we talk about in the plan. Where are they coming from or what are they related to? And then in the next slide, in terms of the performance delivery environment, this is where we try to explain factors that affect the way the organization carries itself in terms of the external influence that we have to think about when we develop our plans on a yearly basis or as we revise our annual performance plans, which are based on a 5-year strategic plan. One of the things we reflected on was in terms of demand for quality education, we reflected on Chapter 9 of the National Development Plan, which addresses the education sector. And in there, we find targets that are generally being implemented by the Department of Basic Education and Department of Higher Education. Now, our interest as a quality council is to ensure that within the targets that are being achieved by these departments, quality is embedded therein. Umalusi is responsible for advising on policy relating to the management of the general and further education and training qualification sub-framework, because we have to advise on how it is done in terms of the qualifications, whether they be new or whether they are being reviewed on an ongoing basis, and especially curriculum within those qualifications. The focus is on maintaining quality. We don't chase after those targets, but we must support the department so that when they say we have X many bachelor passes in NSC, we are happy that the quality of the NSC product is something that we can be proud of as a country. So our CEO likes saying we jealously guard this education system. The third point there is we are ever seeking new ways to improve the quality of qualifications. Umalusi does a lot of benchmarking, international, local, regional, curricular qualifications, so that we are not doing what other countries are not doing. Otherwise, we won't be able to compete. We won't be able to share any experiences with them. Therefore, as a quality council, For instance, our CEO and other relevant managers are always participating in these conferences that are held within the region, in Africa, in SADC, and even international, so that we can share experiences on assessment issues and quality assurance issues. The performance delivery environment continues. Recently, in the last 2-3 years, the Department of Basic Education has come up with a three-stream model, which is something they've conceptualized to try and improve quality education in the sub-framework of the NSC. And that three-stream model is something that we needed to look at, because it is talking about the normal academic stream that we are used to, the current national senior certificate as we know it, but also thinking of vocational, occupational programs and technical programs within the general and further education and training sector. So as UMANUSI, we have to make sure that there is alignment with the vocational part of the three-stream model and what is happening in the college sector, because they have the national certificate vocational qualification. In terms of organizational environment, we made a number of analyses, because this is the fourth year of the five-year term. We needed to just track what have we been doing since we started the current five-year term from 2015 to date, or at least up to the third year of the five-year cycle. And we reflected on our employment equity targets, so that we can try and see whether we are employing males and females to the same degree, whether we are meeting disability employment equity targets. And when we looked at our performance at the moment, you find that at senior management level, we've got more females. So this organization has really promoted females in senior management positions. But when you go to the middle management, we've got a lot of male counterparts being higher than the rest. You go to the lower levels, the situation reverses again. You find more females and no males. I guess males don't like to do these menial tasks. Vacancy rate, we were very bad at the end of 2015 financial year. Our vacancy rate was at 24%. As we speak, in December, when we were closing this APP to submit to GBE, we were at 5%. At the moment, we are at 6%, but there are posts or positions that have just been recently filled. But that's a very significant improvement in bringing down the vacancy rate, because if it is high, it might affect how we operate, especially those gatekeeping functions like quality assurance of assessments. There will be no people who would go out there and support schools and monitor what schools are doing. In terms of other organizational functions, ICT, UMALUSI's activities are very ICT-driven. Applications for accreditation, certification, and verification processes, they are all driven by ICT. So if our ICT is not working well, it can become a very serious problem for us. But the major thrust between 2016, when we began the 2016 financial year, was because we were very much backward in terms of adherence or compliance to the ICT governance framework. And in the last 2 years, we've pushed from nothing to 83% by the time we tabled this APP for the new one, the 2018 financial year, based on the quarter three output of driving compliance to governance framework. Infrastructure of ICT, we've kept it at 99% health levels, meaning there's only 1% that our systems may crash and jeopardize our businesses. We are also automating more processes, like I've already given examples of some of the things we are doing with ICT. For instance, our business processes in finance, we are now automating our supply chain processes when we do that. Finance and supply chain, one of the key things that I want to highlight there would be our payment for services within 30 days. When we did this, we were at 99.9% compliance to that, because it is a PFMA compliance mandate. But what we need to highlight to the select committee is that we were able to strengthen capacity in the last financial year. Our CFO was appointed on a full-time basis, and Mr. Maluleke, who's going to present later, was also appointed. Before then, there was that gap. So we have strengthened that part so that we can make sure our supply chain processes are moving as we want. Office space, we are still struggling at the moment. We are anticipating there will be rental of space, either boardrooms or whatever we will come up with, so that we can alleviate shortage of space in the building, which is at the moment a bit crowded, while we are fixing the second building, which will probably take the whole financial year to achieve. In terms of corporate governance, we have been managing our risks on a quarterly basis as expected in compliance with governance framework. Audit findings, we developed a tracking register for the second time. I think we started last year, so that internally we can address audit findings. And so far, at the last quarterly, last week Friday, we were having our fourth quarterly review and reflected on what we have done and how we have performed. And we have seen improvement when we compared with 2015 and 2016 in terms of how we address our audit findings, whether they be internal or external findings. Even in terms of improving targets that we are achieving, there's a gradual improvement. We were not meeting a lot of targets in the previous years. We are hoping that this year we will be at 70%. We started at 69, last year we were at 71. We are targeting 83 and above in the current financial year. In terms of managing the sub-framework, one of the key things that we have highlighted in terms of accreditation of independent schools, private colleges, and other centers, we have observed that our numbers are doubling of accreditation. So whether that is a good, it is a good thing, because at least it gives us comfort that institutions out there that are operating privately are now registered with departments, but they are also accredited as being able to deliver the curricula, because that is what our purpose is as UMALUS. We don't want learners, poor parents who don't know anything about these institutions, to be taking their children to institutions that are not accredited or institutions that nobody knows what is happening about them. We had to reflect on revisions to legislation. We are aware that the Department of Higher Education and Training is in the process of reviewing the National Qualifications Framework, and we just have to pay attention, keep our ear on the ground, so that the changes that will be approved, we deal with them in terms of how they apply to us as UMALUS. The policies, council-approved policies that are listed in the presentation, specifically on quality assurance of assessment and also on quality assurance of private adult learning centers, private FET colleges, and accreditation of private assessment bodies. All these policies that we review eventually have to be gazetted by the relevant ministers, whether DHET or DBE. Related to the same policies, we have developed regulations that are related to those policies, so that we know that everything we do is regulated. Then I'll take you to the next slide. Court rulings. In every APP, all departments are expected, or even entities, to declare any cases that may affect the way we operate. So in the case of UMALUC, last year there was a case from Accelerated Christian Education South Africa, or ACE as we abbreviated, against our South African Qualifications Authority, and UMALUC was listed as a respondent. But that case has been settled, and as it is at the moment, the last date on which ACE can issue certificates under the registration that appears, the 17209, is that the 30th of June 2019 will be the last time they issue out certificates in that respect. So it needs to be highlighted, because if they go against this, it's a court ruling. We must be aware of it as humanity. Now I will take you through to the programs. You've got three programs. The order of the presentation will show the program purpose, the strategic objectives that are in that program, and then the indicators and the targets that we have set for ourselves for 2018-19, but generally for the entire MTF period. Program one is typical administration. where we deal with leadership, management, and administrative support. And the objective there is to improve effectiveness of corporate governance. This affects finance, HR, ICT, strategic planning, communications, and public relations. If you look at the next slide, it shows all the units that report under Program 1. So when we're talking about improving corporate governance, we are mainly talking about what happens in HR, what happens in finance, what happens with strategic planning, etc. Now, the next slide shows the targets that are in the APP for the five units that are mentioned in the sub-program. The first two units apply to strategic planning. They are about compliance, as legislated, that by the 30th of every March, the APP must be tabled, must already have been tabled in Parliament, approved and tabled. The second indicator is about submitting our quarterly report to the National Treasury and the Department of Basic Education 30 days after the end of each quarter, because these things are audited. The third indicator coming from communications is the utilization of communication platforms that we use to communicate to the public. We've got about 7 platforms that we use. There are more, but we targeted 7 that are regularly used, whether it's your social media like Facebook or whether it is your publications that we do at Kumalusi. And the CEO has utilized some of those platforms himself when he was going around the country advocating for the work done by Umalusi. Percentage of compliance against the requirements of the ICT governance, I've already talked to that. We started behind. We were 2 years behind. We are already at 83% in the third quarter, and our target for 2018 is 92%. Average percentage performance agreements and assessment reports submitted on time. This is HR compliance in terms of the DPSA requirements. Our target there is 90%. Percentage of service providers paid within 30 days. As PFMA requires, we have to pay our service providers or within 30 days. And what we've targeted there is 99%, because trends are showing us that there's always some odd payments that cannot be done, either because of queries that are raised and they end up going beyond 30 days. So we're just being realistic. Otherwise, the norm is we should say 100%. In Program 2, this is where we really manage our sub-framework, because we're dealing with qualifications here and we're dealing with curricula. So the program purpose is to develop and manage the general and further education and training qualification sub-framework. And the first strategic objective says to effectively manage the general and further education and training qualification sub-framework. The second one is about conducting research on an annual basis. Within Program 2, we've got 2 sub-programs to implement the 2 strategic objectives. The first sub-program is qualifications, curriculum, and certification. Their role is to enhance the status of the qualifications in the sub-framework. Their second role is to evaluate curricula. I've already talked about evaluation of curricula and benchmarking. Certification of learner records. And we're talking about learner records from NSC, NCV, senior certificate, general, the old NATED program. We are responsible for certification. Verifying all qualifications, even including those that were done by our predecessor, which is the South African Certification Council, or SASCET as we know it, which have issued certificates since 1992. If you want to verify your matric certificate, you knock at Umalusi. They will tell you whether you depending on when you did your matric, of course. Statistical information and research is our second sub-program. This is where research is conducted. Analysis of reports, analysis of even curriculum is done here. So basically, the mandate of this unit is to conduct research, is to keep a report on the indicators of quality and standards in the general and further education and training. It also establishes and maintains our learner databases and it also provides statistical support and information to the whole entity. In terms of the targets in the sub-program, the first indicator there is the number of reports that we produce in the management of the sub-framework. The first unit, the QCC, which is responsible for qualifications and curriculum, have to report to the council committee on what is happening in terms of whether it's curriculum evaluation or qualification review. They report to that quality to that council committee every 3 times a year at least. The number of curricula evaluated annually, the target for 2018 there is 2. You can't do more than that because it's an extensive research. You have to benchmark and you have to really, it's an in-depth research. You can't do more than 2 at a go in one financial year. Percentage of data sets processed and feedback provided. When we receive information from assessment bodies so that we are able to produce certificates, we have to assess whether the data sets are correct within a specified turnaround time as stipulated there. And our intention is we will do 100%. Percentage of error-free learner records for which a certificate is printed, eventually, after all the data sets have been corrected, all the correct ones, the intention of IMALUSI is to print 100% certificate from those. Not one of them that is correct should be left lying on the system and not having a certificate produced for. Percentage of verification requests that we receive that must be processed within 2 working days, our target is 95%, because some will have problems, will be sending back and forth to the client, so we are targeting 95%. Number of research projects that we will report, we are targeting 8 for 2018. This year we have exceeded our target, we had targeted 7. Even though the information has not been audited, but we are hoping if all goes well, we will maintain the overachievement. In Program 3, which is our last program, this is quality assurance of assessment combined with evaluation and accreditation. There are 2 sub-programs here. The first sub-program deals with, the first objective actually is ensuring the credibility of examination results. This is where we quality assure the examination process, the writing, the marking, whether the provinces are ready before the examinations are written. We go out and monitor whether these things are happening accordingly. The second objective is about quality assuring the private provisioning and assessment of qualification. This is where we do our evaluation and accreditation. Now the 2 sub-programs, the first one, the activities that we undertake under quality assurance of assessment. We've got 2 units doing that. One is focusing on school qualifications and one is focusing on post-school qualifications. But the purpose is the same. They do external moderation of question papers. We do moderation of continuous assessment. That is the type that is done by teachers in schools. Verification of monitoring the conduct of exams, the administration thereof, even the marking processes. Management of concessions and examination irregularities. We have to know what concessions have been requested, and if there are any irregularities, how do we manage them before we release the results. External moderation of marking. When marking is done, IMALUSI has to just, moderate the processes as well. And even the assessment of results, moderation of assessment of results. And the second sub-program on accreditation, what they do is they standards of provision are determined and maintained and strengthened by the unit. Quality assurance of provision is checked through accreditation and monitoring processes. They visit institutions and check what is happening out there. They evaluate the capacity of all institutions that apply, whether they are capable of doing that. They monitor and evaluate capacity of private providers as well. We've got a number of private providers out there, so we must also deal with that and ensure that everything is according to what we expect. In terms of the target set for 2018-19, the first indicator on the number of quality assessment reports, at the end of the assessment period, we produce reports to the different assessment bodies, and we have targeted 10 there. Percentage of question papers submitted that are approved, this is for making sure that the moderation of question papers is okay. We're targeting 100%, because otherwise a paper that has not been externally moderated cannot be written. Number of assessment bodies audited for their state of readiness. This is a new indicator for 2018. We didn't have it in the last year, and we felt it is important because we have been performing that function, but we've not been reporting on it in the APP. The fourth indicator is on number of subjects where verification of marking is conducted. Because we undertake this, it is also new. We've always been doing it, but we've not been reporting it. This year, we are targeting 135 subjects. Number of learning areas or subjects where moderation of SBA. SBA is school-based assessment, and ICAS, same thing. One is happening in schools, one is happening in colleges. We also want to know whether we want to moderate, make sure that moderation is conducted, and we are targeting 86. Percentage of accreditation outcomes for private education institutions that are finalized within 12 months. One of the accreditation processes includes after the site visit. The site visit is where we go out, or our moderators go out, to check the school or the institution, whatever type it is. After that process, we are targeting it shouldn't take more than 12 months before the council committee that is responsible for that function recommends for approval or for accreditation of those institutions. As a matter of fact, the CEO was here on Monday and Tuesday to give handout certificates for all those that have passed the accreditation test. The last indicator in this program is percentage of institutions monitored. We felt monitoring is very important because now, I think since last year, we are not giving a 7-year accreditation. It becomes for good, forever. But to make sure that people don't slack, after 2 years, we go and monitor so that we check whether you have not relaxed because now you have the certificate. So this will be an ongoing process, and we thought as something that we've been doing but we've not been expressing in the plan, it has to be expressed, because without this monitoring, accreditation will be granted and then all the institutions will go back to normal, you know, if that's how they've been operating and they were just, you know, putting faith so that we give them accreditation. On that note, Honorable Chairperson, I'll hand over to the Finance Director to take us through the budget for 2018. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Ms. Nsimer. The presentation outline, I think it will be quite short. The presentation on finances will be quite short. I think on this outline, you'll see that we are going to talk about the budget cut, the revenue projection, and the revenue estimate, as well as the expenditure estimate, and the projected surplus, and the expenditure per program, and the growth in human capital. Chair, I think I would like to emphasize to say that our responsibility within Umalusi is to make sure that the strategies as was presented by Ms. Nsimere is adequately funded, and make sure that we find sufficient funding for the strategy of the organization. And we want to highlight to the committee to say that the budget cut of 2.5% has been implemented as it was an instruction from the Presidential Fiscal Committee, and this reduction was approved by Cabinet. These amounted to 10.9 million, inclusive of the 1% VAT increase that is projected, because we don't claim any VAT after we paid our suppliers. So we effected that budget cut, and it amounted to 10.9. Now, what we did, we still didn't reduce our APPs and the targets. We make sure that we efficiently try to find within our expenses where we can source some of the cuts and allocate the projection as it is. And then our revenue projection, you will see that we are projecting 197 million. Out of the 97 million, 71% comes from DBE, while the other percent comes from the accreditation and verification fees that are small portion that we collect when we visit the independent schools. So we are moving from 186 to 197. That will amount to roughly between 6 to 7% increase. On the revenue estimates, you will see that our administrative fees takes the smaller budget, portion of the entire revenue that we collect, and the other non-tax revenue, which consists mainly of the interest that we receive and some small rental amount that we are receiving from the building that we are renting. The significant portion of our income still comes from the DPE, reflecting the 10.9 million cars, as we've already indicated. I think on the next slide, you'll see that the expenditure estimates between our goods, compensation and depreciation, our goods and services still takes a larger portion of the entire expenses, while our compensation of employees comes second, and this amounts to 44% again the 55% in goods and services. And this goes towards our moderation of question papers and the curriculum. On the next slide, you'll see that the transfer from accumulated surplus, we are saying that we requested an approval to retain surplus from National Treasury, and it was approved for the renovation of the building so that we can accommodate our staff so that they can have a place to work from. A request to retain surplus will be made for this current financial year because of the commitments that we'll have on our, that we're going to report on at the end of the financial year. So the, those commitments will be reflected and will apply retention to Treasury in that regard. On the next slide, you will see that our expenditure per program and the allocation, I think this is very key. I would like to highlight that you will see that 32% of the funding goes towards quality assurance of assessment. This shows exactly that we are serious in maintaining quality of education, so we allocate a significant portion in that area, followed by the administrative processes that include governance. So we make sure that we allocate sufficient funding for governance so that we can strengthen our operation. Chair, you will see there will be a move in the outer years where we will, where there's a strong drive to make sure that we allocate enough funding for research so that we can inform how our quality education is currently performing and where we really want it to be. The 20% allocation also goes to qualification and curriculum, which is the 20% the evaluation and accreditation. This means that our evaluation and accreditation processes come second because we need to make sure that we accredit institutions in time and make sure that we give those institutions the right certificates so that they can operate with licenses. Our growth in human capital, you see that the vacancy rate has come very much closer to what we the post has been approved, moving from the 24% as Ms. Musumeke reported to a 5%, which is a great achievement. And you will see in the outer years that we are not stagnant in that. We are cognizant of the fact that there will be resignations and new appointments, as well as we are catering for the availability of space at this moment. On the second slide, the control of the APP and SEM, here we just want to highlight to say that the executive and managers has made sure that we bring awareness through the signing of a pledge for the clean audit. This is to make sure that we inculcate the culture of making sure that the clean audit doesn't reside on the governance side. All employees need to take responsibility so that we can push into the right direction. And then I think the other issue just to highlight is that Umalusi has strengthened its capacity by appointing a specialist in the Risk and Audit Committee during this year. And the supply chain policy has been updated to make sure that we take into account all legislative requirements so that we can move into the right direction. And I think with that, I would like to thank the chairperson of the committee and the chairperson of our council for the continued support that they've shown us.
So thank you very much for the presentation by Umalusi and the Thank you.
your interventions or your programs, do you think they are working? I was looking at the number of cases Chairperson, from the 3 years she was talking about, they are now having 550 cases to attend, if I'm not mistaken. But I was calculating the total number from only 3 years. I might have to work with this to presentation. It's difficult to follow where the slide. But I know that in the 3 years that was presented, it was 514 and 550 outstanding cases. What does it mean? What does it mean? How old are the cases you are dealing with? How old are they? Because if you add up the number from the 3 years that you have, it gives you 514, but you have a backlog of 550. Are you really attending to the cases? What is happening? I was so worried, Chairperson, when she said mostly the number of the teachers that are involved in the sexual abuse, whatever you call it, cases at school, are the good teachers who are mostly, not all, good teachers who are doing math and science. In your research, is there a relationship between math and science and sexual abuse? Why specifically? Have you done a research that maybe if you're very good in math and science, you're prone to do to be sexual abuser? What? I don't know. And what worried me, Chair, is that she said sometimes the principals, principals will beg you to say, please, this is my best teacher, on the expense of a child. On the expense of a child. I was not going even to think of raising that, because to me, it's a very, very bad thing to convey. Not something that you can even listen when the principal says it. Because you're talking about our future. The child who had been abused sexually, which affects that child for the rest of her life, could have been a president. But because of this, chances are now affected. But the principal is worried about the teacher who's doing well in a school. What do you do in cases like? Is it not what is delaying you in terms of finalizing the cases? The question, Chair, of rating again, would, if you were to rate yourself, considering what I've just said now, that during our time, I don't think it was even thought to say a teacher will abuse a child. I don't know whether it was, as you were saying, it was because of morals at the time, or it is now because of awareness by teachers to report. Or you also mentioned the issue of provinces who are reporting more than others. The cases, I was looking at my province in Mpumalanga, which was not mentioned. My question on that one, Chair, is that the reporting, what are you using? Are you using numbers? What are you benchmarking your numbers? Because it will be not fair to compare in terms of numbers and you conclude and say this province is reporting more or less. If you cannot compare KwaZulu-Natal in terms of numbers of children with Mpumalanga using my province, you cannot. It will help me, Chair, if you will say in terms of percentage, KZN from this year to this year, they are increasing or they are decreasing. Because KwaZulu-Natal number yayo is high, very high in terms of numbers. If you compare it in Mpumalanga or Northern Cape.
So if you use the ordinary figures as we see them here, they may be misleading for me. Because it's not telling us, you may, if you look at, let me take, give you the example, KwaZulu-Natal, it's from 15 to 18, 2016, 17. You take Mpumalanga, for example, 20 to 25, in terms of these cases reported. Mpumalanga is very high for me, if you consider the number of learners and the teachers in Mpumalanga as compared to KwaZulu-Natal. You may want to use our percentages because that is what they do even in terms of e-matric results. They use percentages of that particular province because you cannot compare the different provinces. Chairperson, the issue of capacity quality, it goes both for Umelusi and Faith. You're doing well in terms of professionalizing teachers or quality assurance, but you're talking with people who go around. When you do oversight, you go to those, to these institutions. You still have a challenge in terms of the capacity of some teachers. You take a school level. Maybe the universities are different. At school level and TVET colleges, serious challenges about the capacity of your teachers. My question, Chairperson, is what are you quality assuring? The professionalization that you are doing, what does it mean to? That is why I started, Chair, by the impact of what you are doing. Does it result in good capacity of the teachers that are produced based on what you are doing? If not, where are the gaps? Why do we still have teachers who cannot express themselves in English? I know English is a language. You may know things, but if you can't say those things out, it's as good as if you don't know. So, Chairperson, those are the issues from my side. Okay, with the one, just a comment, Chair, on it says, your slide, what page, I don't know page what, but it's this slide, all of them. My take is that always when you do charts, when you use charts, whether it's a pie chart or a bar chart, you use it to simplify or summarize the whole thing you do. The slides are very busy for me. As a result, it's even difficult to know what is it that you want to communicate here, because we've got so many things here. For a person who is not in that area and who is here for this meeting, who wants to know, even when you are gone, I must go back and see what you are trying to say here. Maybe you may have to summarize what is on the slide. It's too busy and becomes difficult to know what exactly what you want to communicate on this. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. Okay. And Chairperson, I will get any presentations from Malus. I've got two questions or three clarity questions, Chairperson, more especially on page 10. Of the mandate, output number 1 and goal number 16. I'm not going to read it, but Chair, ndifuna nje iclarity kwinto ethi umzekelo njengoba beyibeke apha. If you go to the public schools, abantwana ngokwezi skills ke zibekwe apha, ufumaniseke into okokuba baya kustandard kugrade 12 bengekakwazi ukukhumsha. Njengam lo andikwazi ukukhumsha because ke ndisuka kulaa environment. Yintoni abayenzayo uqinisekisa into okokuba bayazincedisa? Ndiyayibona libhalwa apha, but i-results, the output, results from ezi skills bazinika i-teacher. Awuziboni when it comes to i-student okanye i-learners ezikolweni. Yintoni enye abayiqinisekisa into okokuba bayayenza ukwenzela into yoba umntwana okwi-private school okanye kwi-independent school uyafana nalo mntwana akwi-public school. Also nangona beyibeka apha encwadini okanye apha kule presentation, if uya kwititshala njengoba isitsho umama uDlamini kwi-educators ukumazela into yoba le nto ithethwa apha akusiyo le siyifumanayo xa siye phaya, more especially ii-principals ezijongene umaneja isikolo. Izikolo azikho kule level okanye kulo mgangatho besicinga into okokuba zinokuba kuwo xa besinaye useyisi lo. Also che umalusi, ndicinga uba umalusi ufana nenkwenkwe eyalusa igusha ukuqinisekisa iigusha ezi into okokuba zingenanga edlelweni, ukuba zingenile edlelweni zingenile entsimini zaze zatya, kuba khona into eyenziwayo kwezogusha okanye kumnini igusha othe wayeka iigusha zakhe zahamba zayokutya entsimini. Umzekelo, kunesikolo engqeleni ku-2015 okanye 2016 apho isikolo khange sizifumane i-results okanye i-certificate kwa-grade 12. Umalusi ithini irole ayidlalayo kwi-situation enjalo kude kube ngujanuwari we-next wonyaka ozayo kungakhange kube abantwana bafumene i-results? Kule nto ke kuthiwa ke sometimes i-results aziphumanga ngenxa yento yoba bekukhona amaphepha aya aphuma ngendlela mnyama. Yintoni indima kamalusi uqinisekisa into kokuba ezi zinto mazingenzeki okanye abantwana aba are not infected by into kokuba kuphume iphepha? Because bona bazi into nephepha eliphumileyo ye-examination paper. Umalusi wenza ntoni uqinisekisa uba abantwana bakho affected imeko elolo hlobo? Upage 22 ba andiphazama azobe umalusi noba ilungwana bethu nkosi yam yayazi imeko yam kuseyisi kodwa ke okay kodwa yangungu isekwa nguseyisi upage ayinapage ngele nto ndiyijonge apho ine-provinces from the Eastern Cape I think le nto ine ngukhi issues for noting page from page 22 ingaba zii-cases ezi zibekwe apha umzekelo Eastern Cape ngo-2016-17 kuna 5 cases niyakwazi into okokuba khe sewuhlulelwe kucace into okokuba kwezi cases kuthethwa ngazo i-Eastern Cape ineekheyisi ezingaphi zeziphi kanye babaluleke umzekelo xa uthetha nge-abuse nale nto yokuhlukunyezwa kwabantwana yeyiphi eyona ndawo bathathela kuyo bathathele kuyo mamuzwane zi-expertise kweliphi icala zithathele kweliphi icala ingaba kule nto ye-rape? Ndiyarhalela uyazi so that xa sisiya kwezi zikolo sibe sisazi into okokuba sincedisa phi kanye kanye okanye zeziphi ezi areas fanele into okokuba sifocuse kuzo as ii-members. Thank you, Chairperson.
Maybe just to add right this. Do you have any questions, committee?
No, I'm sorry.
Just to start off with what Mamu Samka is saying with regards to the cases that have not been completed, or at least that are recorded or on the page that she is referring to. Because other cases would be physical abuse in terms of corporal punishment.
other cases will be abused in terms of sexual harassment. Other, you know, you need to disaggregate so that you know what kind of offense is rife in which province. That is what I was trying to explain. Let me start off with a say, just to add my bit on what the other members have already raised. Thank you very much, other members, for your engagement. Professionalism of the teacher, Umam Dlamini did touch on the one, as to say, what is this professionalism that we're talking about? Because very unfortunately, in terms of how we observe, the teaching profession is actually degenerating into what it used not to be. It's actually sexist. Now, that would then question the effectiveness of the capacitation or professionalization programs that we are rolling out. What is that? Masculine ladies school is. Teachers go to school drunk. Not all of them, but we've got a sizable number of those cases. Not all of them. I'm not painting them with the same brush. I know that it is the discipline kind of issue that the Department of Basic Education needs to look into, but I want to establish the role of SAFE in that regard. Teachers are in class during class time. It is the duty of the principal to ensure that a teacher is in class, discusses funding. But the overall of the sole issue that I'm trying to raise is there a report that the principal of the school writes to say so that a record is kept of teachers that are actually not supposed to be in the system? That needs to be removed. It cannot be the work of SAFE only. It could be a collaborative effort between SAFE and the Department of Basic Education, but in the main, let us agree, if we're to be honest, that there are teachers who are not professional. They are certificated, but not professional, because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing in class with the children entrusted onto their care. So what would be the role of SAFE? Is there any liaison between the principal of school and SAFE in terms of ensuring that professionalism is kept? The issue of certification. Oh, no, that would be what is. I'll come back in that when I did it. SAFE, there is again a role that you probably could play in terms of the mismatch. A science teacher or a history teacher teaching science. It also does affect human beings. Quality assurance, mismatch of teachers, resulting in bad performance at the end of the day. Do you play any role in terms of ensuring that those issues are minimized? Induction of teachers in the field of teaching, says, when we were entrants in the teaching profession, there used to be a week of induction where we were introduced into the profession as entrants. There used to be probation. You were not a full teacher sort of before you end a period of 12 months. You complete your probation, then you then assume the status of being a full-fledged, fully qualified teacher.
Did you say the status thing?
No man, you tell our name. When a person is certificated, it is assumed that they know everything. Are there still induction programs? The teachers know where they are and what their responsibilities are and what is wrong and what is right in the teaching profession. I'm a bit worried, or I would like to question this issue of registration of teachers before they complete the qualification. You say you register them as soon as they are starting a degree towards a qualification, because they will go to school for practice teaching. We used to call it practice teaching. What if they decide to change the degree? Do you strike off the registration? What happens? Because children of the day, they like to throw to faculties. You register them, then they get admissions and they are born. And then the issues of vetting, you said you are just introducing that. And also ability to handle children is an issue that you need to look into very seriously. Because once a child is not properly handled by the teacher in a class, it has got indelible effect in the mind of the child, especially with the foundation phases. We need to be very strict with the foundation phases, that the teachers that handle those children are professional, they have been vetted, they are qualified to handle those children. What is your role in so far as registration? In one of the slides, I forgot to mark the number of the slides, you say that there will be 750 professional development activities for the financial aid, but you did not tell us what form or what's the nature of those professional development activities and in which province. You also spoke about the points, 150 points that you award. How do those points assist the teacher, if you just could clarify that? How big is our teaching force as you speak? Do we have enough teachers in the system, or are we running short of teachers? I know that there is still a shortage in math and science, but are we overproducing teachers or are we underproducing teachers? What is the status quo? When do you strike a teacher off the role of the teaching profession? What circumstances would lead to a teacher being stripped of or blacklisted, let me put it like that, not allowed to practice the profession? What circumstances would lead to that? It happens with all professions, doctors, lawyers, and everybody. So I want you to leave that with us. And the government subsidy, you spoke as though it is still going to kick in. It has not yet. The way you put it, that 103 million that you cited, it was, it's, yeah, under 3 million per annum, you collect it from annual memberships, but I didn't get the figure of the actual government subsidy. Or are you still going to receive it? Those are the questions that I have. And then the abusers of children, again, they normally do not abuse only one child. I don't care if it is the best science teacher in the country. They must get out of the classroom if they abuse our children. We are very sensitive now. Very, very sensitive. We are not going to allow people to abuse our children. It's the future of our children. We've got grandchildren. They have grandchildren. A lot of us. And I'm jealously guarding them against any form of abuse. So those are the issues, as to say, we don't care how good a teacher may be if they are not able to respect our children as humans, irrespective of this guy, the more open. Lastly, this would be Omadu's as well. Yeah, this would be Omadu's. All right, I'm guiding at this. Then I go to issues more. Quality assurance. The tutor, in the main, in the children's quality, are not properly qualified for the subject matter. What is the role of Manu's in ensuring that there is quality? The workshops in the children's colleges are not accredited. In most of the workshops, the equipment that is used is old. It is not aligned to the requirements of the industry in terms of skills that are required by the industry for us to be able to push economic transformation. What is your role in that regard in terms of ensuring quality? Equipment and data, which was used about 50, 20 years ago, and train a person who's going to work in motor assembly. You can. You need to, those workshops need to be updated. I know it is the duty of the Department of Higher Education to ensure that equipment is updated. But what role do you play in terms of exerting pressure to ensure that this is done? Well, I appreciate the fact that you have improved on the target from 60 to 73. And we have doubled the number of accreditations that is highly commended. Madusi. Moderation. I don't know. There has been a concern by the public out there that when it comes to the moderation of material science, it is too generous, to the extent that it borders along compromising the quality of the certificate or the currency of the certificate that you issue. What is your take on that? When you moderate your marks at the end of marking, there is a feeling, that a vibe that the moderation is so generous that it compromises or it borders along compromising the quality of the certificate that you issue. I'm very appreciative of the fact that your management has pledged to ensure clean audit. Your management has also pledged to ensure that you stick to your target, you're going to accomplish your target, because you have said that the target is set. And then the last issue, I'm not going to exhaust all of them, is issue of certification backlog. Again, of the different colleges. I know the blame is always the fact that CETA is not fast enough in ensuring that certificates are. What is the role of MADUS in ensuring? Because those children are qualified, they are sitting at home, they don't get the certificate, therefore they cannot be employed. What is the role of MADUS insofar as that is concerned? And lastly, you say you keep the records up to the period or the era of subsidy. Okay, I did my matric in 1976. It was the hottest period in the country. Where are my records as you speak? If I were to lose my credentials from matric, where would I retrieve them if they are not in the money as you speak? I just seek clarity. Thank you very much. Honorable Zamir wanted to add something.
Yeah, let me thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. Let me start with the last one. I was also not sure because with me I've lost all my qualifications. Mm-hmm. Original documents of my qualification. I did my matric though part time, that was in 1990. Am I right here? 1990. Where do I go? I know these are personal things, but you are here. We have to ask you. Then, Chair, they say, I've got the slides I was referring to. Chair, it's a serious problem. The period they're talking to is 5 years. It's since 2011. If you can go to that slide. There's no slide number. You see, you have a cut and paste, you have different documents here. Even the previous one does not have a page number, the key issues, but at the back of key issues. The number of cases, the number of cases reported since 2011, that is 2011-2012. Up to 2016-17, there are 514.
you go to slide number 21. Slide number 21. Number of cases to be concluded. You said annual. I don't know whether your figures, your, I don't know what is this chair. It's 550.
Oh, okay.
I'm a person from outside. These figures are saying to me, for the past more than 5 years, we have not dealt with even one case. There are cases which are coming from the previous period, which is about six of them, I think, yeah, six. Does it mean that you did not do any case for the past 5 years? That was the clarity check I wanted to do with them. With the Umalusi, there is a, on slide number 23. Mm-hmm. You have 223s also, I don't know.
Yeah,
the 23s. The one that is talking on program 2.
Mm.
2.1.2. Number of curricula evaluated annually. She said 2 per annum. There is no way that you can do more than 2. Who says there's no way that you can not do more than 2? I'm asking that ideally, if you have everything at your disposal, how many would you want to do? Because if for me, Chair, say, if you say for me, there's no way that you can do more than 2, you're just blocking yourself. Even if you can be given resources, whatever, whatever, but you've just told yourself there's no way. Who said so? Is it you? Is it the process that you have to follow? Is it what is required? Is it enough? Is it too enough? That is my question on that. Thank you. Those are the outstanding issues.
Okay. I will then head over to Faith first to respond to the questions.
Okay.
And then Malusi, and then we have the concluding remarks. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable Lamini, let me start with that one. I think on the printed hard copy, you do not have that part. Let me start with this. This shows the reported sexual violence cases over the 5 years that were done, completed. I'll come back to the backlog issue. Sexual only.
Over a 5 year
period. Only. Then for...
Why is it like
in the advice...
The one that I was looking to.
I saw it.
Then they should have given you. This is the sexual only. And the next slide is giving you the 1780 that were dealt with. 72, 70, but these ones are not yet audited.
This is
the one
you have to audit.
Oh, in your...
Okay.
Wait, it's fine.
17, 18. Yes.
Only 1 year.
Only 1 year. Remember, this one we are giving you the 5-year period, but this one we are saying because we haven't audited, just highlighting to you. Then they will be officially in the annual report. 17, then let's go back to the issue that you raised. The 550 is for the 18-19 financial year that we are hoping to continue. overall all the cases. Whether they are, we wouldn't know because that they are coming from different angles. But I'll come to the issue of the trend in terms of the cases that are using. But generally, we are saying in terms of the number of cases to be considered 18-19, we're looking at 5 cases. Then, let me go back to the backlog issue that you raised, is this one. The annual report 16-17 shows the backlog of 214. Yeah, I think it's the one that I got printed. So the 248 is the 16-17 backlog. Then we went on 157. We are left with 91. But at the same time, remember they were carried over to 17-18. At the same time in 17-18 we received 5 tests. In addition to the backlog that was coming from the previous financial year. Then we concluded 327. We are left with 187. The CFO indicated earlier on that additional 2 million has been allocated so that before the end of 2018 financial year, we have a special project going on at the moment to deal with the backlog specifically. So that we do. And in addition, council is doing a job evaluation because we realize we've got capacity issues internally, so that we address the issue of internal capacity and be able to hear the cases every financial year. Even if you may not be able to conclude 100%, you shouldn't be left with more than, 50%, at least it should be. So that's where those numbers are. Let me just stop so that I can check.
I've only wanted to verify something.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chair. You see, the way you presented your information goes back to what I said earlier about how you present your information. It doesn't give a full picture. It's bits and pieces here and there. Chairperson, I would like you want to see a situation of all your cases like you did with the sexual offences, 2011 up to 2018, because now we do have the stats for 2018 to include there. Then you show us. I assume, Chair, you have picked out sexual offences because it seemed to be prominent. You are saying it's prioritized. I don't know, but I want to see what is the most
prevalent
cases. It is prioritized. I agree with you, but one will know. Want to see a picture of cases. All of them from the 2011 until 2018, then you indicate, as you did with that first page, how many were dealt with, what is the backlog in all of them until now, so that we can have a full picture in 5 years than what we have now. Thank you.
I think what we can do, Chair, is to send, we can still send it, because we reduced. When we were told of time constraints, we have to reduce most of the issues from the presentation. And like what we did earlier, we were told to the other thing. We were told time, we need to reduce it, it's too big, so we had to cut. Okay, so that one is covered. We will send you so that you can. But maybe just to also indicate, our enemy number one is in color. The issue of corporal punishment, followed by the sexual offences, then also, then the rest follows, but we'll be able to send you the document.
So then we also saw the conclusions, what were the outcomes. We want to know where are those issues.
Okay. I just wanted to find out
with the two investigators that you are employing and one paralegal, like, do you think that you are going to be able to deal with the job? Because in my opinion, given the number of the cases pending, it doesn't look like it is going to be enough, but maybe it's not enough.
Currently, capacity is a challenge. As I said earlier on, council is dealing with the job evaluation to make sure, and the business review process, so that we can understand where the bottlenecks are within the entire process. And out of that particular process, we are looking at increasing the current capacity that we have. Honestly speaking, like you said, if we have to assess our performance, in terms of the capacity that we are having, we'll keep on having carried over every year. But I'm happy because the council has listened and they are working on it in terms of making sure that the capacity is increased. From internally, but also from utilizing part-time panelists to come on board.
Okay. Then there was an issue around the abusers. Yes, I agree. You have cases where you have one abuser abusing more than 5, 6, 7 letters in one school. Those issues are there. And what you've done in terms of the other, maybe when I send out, also send you the different researches that you've done, which are showing certain indicators that are continually having one or two or three offenses within the school and the meter of these offenses. The thrust of each case is treated on its own, but with the sexual offenses, if you are found guilty, struck off indefinitely. And when we struck off, it means from the employer's side, they might release you from your employment. In terms of the EEA, if it has employment, if you are deemed to have resigned. Because we can't practice without the license from state. So in most cases, you see that those are the sexual offenses. Or in cases where the physical assault has gone to an extreme in terms of also even going for some litigation. So those are mainly the two cases where we deal with this one. The issue of struggle. Generally, in terms of professionalism, and I think honorable members are correct, we are having issues in schools. And that is why the new council, when they came on board, the first priority was to say we haven't really been doing much in terms of making sure that we take charge of the teaching profession. Hence, the whole program that has been introduced in terms of making sure that we professionalize the teaching profession. What we started with was to do research so that we can understand where the issues are. And one of the things, it starts with who are we taking or admitting into initial teacher education. So if we haven't really defined the kind of a teacher that we want to be, we'll continue to have the challenges that we are seeing. Earlier on, I've talked about the teacher professionalization path that we want to follow. And we are hoping that if we define the kind of a teacher that we want to see, and not just take everybody and anybody who wants to come into the teaching profession, or who sees teaching profession as the last resort, will begin to deal with some of the issues. But secondly, you were talking about the issue of registering student teachers. I think it's good that we are tracking them. You start with, let's say, 5,000, and if you are tracking them, you'll be able to understand in the second year the drops off and why are they dropping off and which kind of professions are we competing with. And that is one of the reasons besides the professional conduct issue, it's also about tracking the information so that we understand.
what the issues are. Why do they use this to position at all?
So, and induction, so I'm trying to combine all this. Induction is the responsibility of the employer. Similarly, probation is. So what we are saying, currently we are honestly registering a paper. You qualify from UCC, you come to say you register yourself. Whether you are competent or not is another issue. So with this new model, it's saying you register provisionally from first year, you graduate as a provisional teacher, you go into the classroom, get inducted for a full year, in line with the standards that is produced as well. Once we have assessed you through the portfolio of evidence, it's then that we can give you full registration. So that's the model that we are looking at in terms of dealing with that particular area. The Eastern Cape issue, Mama, it's more on corporal punishment. It's also the issues of sexual violence, but also financial mismanagement by the school management team. So those are the three prominent in the Eastern Cape. You remember you wanted to know so that when you do the oversight, you can be in a position to ask it. The issue of mismatch.
Maybe one or two things.
Okay.
I don't know what the legal implications would be if you actually give us the names of the schools without the names of the offender.
Where we have the key, not only the school, in all the provinces.
That's the schools, not the offender. So that when you conduct oversight, you know exactly what is it is that you want to engage on.
Maybe check, because the is the SGS, schools have no notice. It can be because of the money in that school. Don't know Bandela or Bomba S in the mismanagement in the SGDs because I'm not of the money. So, Puma said, I'm going to go back to the train. I'm going to go back to the train. I'm going to go back to the train.
No, it's school management team, principals and deputy principals, and not the SGDs.
Okay.
Because we don't have jurisdiction over SGDs, we only have over the
as professional.
But one of the things that we are doing is to start working closely with the Department of Basic Education in terms of also sensitizing the SDGs about the ethical issues. Because remember, if teachers are taking advantage of poor parents, poor communities, we need to say to SDGs, how can you assist in terms of talking to the parents? Because most of them, we will lose a case which is watertight because the parent was given a certain amount overnight and tomorrow turns against you and says, no, you can't. So those are some of the issues that we need to make sure that we deal with. I think I've responded more on the professionalism issue. And we are acknowledging that there's more that we need to do in terms of making sure that we turn the teaching profession around. At the moment, at the pace and rate that we are going, we're not going to win. But I'm hopeful that what we begin to introduce, although we may not see the changes in the next coming 2 to 3, 4, 5 years, but in the long run, around 10 years, we should be able to start seeing the impact on the ground in schools. Currently, we are issuing, there's an issue that you raised about the mismatch of teachers that are being employed. I think it starts from us in terms of the kind of registration that we are issuing. It's general, one certificate, just saying a Lama Kalani registration number. We need to move to saying you are registered to teach in a foundation space, or you are registered to teach FET this particular subject. So it's one area that, because at the end of the day, it not says that it's employing, but it says that it's giving the license to practice. So if that's where our role is. But then in terms of the actual employment, it will be the 9 provinces saying we employ you despite the fact that we know. It's even getting worse. When I was working on redefining the scope of registration, schools are even employing your grade 12 because they were best in a particular subject, and therefore they feel Umalusi certificate is here. This is the best science teacher who can employ this student, not even a teacher in grade 12. So the situation is even getting worse, because as they come to us, we say, wait, what's going on? You are not a qualified teacher. Hence, we are reviewing the scope of registration to say, let's focus on qualified teachers. The only exception that we can have is what Stella was presenting earlier on in terms of the skills, the vocation, and all that. Because you need those intellect factors, you need in the three model kind of curriculum to say, how do we accommodate technical high schools, how do we accommodate Tibet colleges. But generally, we need to, if that professionalism is about it to happen, things must be tough, and also take the rightful position in terms of making sure that we don't just register everybody and everyone who's coming into the teaching profession.
I think I clarified the issue of the backlog.
Math and science correlation. One of the things that we found out of that research, that is where the science and math come in, was the issue of state. To say, while you have a state as a principal, as a deputy HOD in terms of the office, but you utilize it also to sexually abuse learners. Secondly, while you have a laboratory to deal with science in terms of your experiments and all that, you utilize it for sexual abuse as well. So that's where the issue of state came into the picture when we were conducting the thing. And that correlation will be there for me in terms of state, and not necessarily generalizing in terms of your measure and science. So, and that is why I was saying, we were even saying to the principals, that's where the collusion comes in. To say, we are colluding to hide this thing and put them under the carpet because this is my best science. But we're saying, no, it can't happen. And if you check the professional standards that we developed, the first standard is talking about ethical teaching. No matter how good you are, but the issues of ethics and morals should come into the picture in terms of good. I think we've rated, Honorable Zamini, we've acknowledged that you've got gaps in terms of some of the issues that are already alluded to, and we're hoping the issue of teacher professionalization will assist us in terms of dealing with some of the issues. Also, we looked at the issue of that you raised with regards to the slides on the 9 provinces. In terms of, it's true, if you are not familiar with the business intelligence tool, you won't be able to unpack that, but we'll be able to summarize next time so that we acknowledge that it, people need to be understanding. I think I've covered vesting and verification per person. It's one of the things that is prioritized. I think if you've listened to the media last week, it was on about this whole issue of things beginning to request police clearance from the 1st of January 2019. So it's already there. Council took a resolution, we are implementing, but it will be followed closely. We are working closely with the Department of Social Development in terms of accessing the child protection register as well. So that while we check the criminal record, but we also need to check if you are not listed in the child protection register. If you are listed there, it means you are not suitable to work with children. And therefore, we cannot register. And the last one, which is going to be a little bit problematic because they don't have an online system, they're doing it manually, is the list of the register of sexual offenses, which is with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. So it's the one that I'm foreseeing some bit of challenges. The 750 activities to be approved is a round national figure in terms of what we are hoping we'll get in the next, in the 18-19 financial year. But I think what the committee was saying, where are those activities in which area? Normally we would approve you if you are responding to the national priorities. Remember, the national priorities will be coming from the NSC examination results after the diagnostic assessment to say these are the areas. Previously, it used to be from the ANA as well. Now that ANA is not there, we rely more on the NSC. So that we make sure that teachers are doing something that is more responsive to what they're supposed to be doing.
I think I've tried to cover.
Is there anything that I've missed?
No, thank you. In the interest of time, let us hand over to my respond to the issues.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the question of whether we are audited, as Malus, yes, indeed, we are. We've got internal auditors and we've got external auditors who are able to pronounce whether we've got a disclaimer, a qualification, or a clean audit. Since the inception of Fumalus, we have had unqualified audits, which is a positive sign. And I'm beginning to challenge my staff to say that is not enough. We need to get a clean audit now. Hence the pledge, which has been signed with all the senior managers, that you as a senior manager in an area of operation, you are not going to create a situation where we are going to get, you know, any kind of finding that is negative. So my senior managers have signed a pledge with me in that regard. We are targeting a clean audit. In terms of the quality assurance of the council itself, council is being monitored in different fronts, on different fronts. The auditors themselves pronounce on the work of council, they check the minutes of council, they check whether the things that council said we should achieve have been achieved. We have the audit and risk committee of Umalusi that also looks into that. And they have a private meeting also with the chairperson of council. The chairperson of the audit and risk committee meets the chairperson of council to comment on how the organization is doing. We will submit as a council quarterly reports to the minister. And the minister gives us feedback to say, I'm not happy with this area, I'm not happy with that area, and we are able to correct that immediately. SAMHSA has done an impact study of all the quality assurance, including SAMHSA, to say, in terms of the legislative mandate that we have, how far are we moving in terms of satisfying the skills capacity of South Africa. We've got two such reports. One has been released at the beginning of this year. So all those are instruments that we use to check how we are doing. What we are busy developing is a self-evaluation kind of questionnaire, which will look at council members themselves responding on how they experience management, how they experience the documents that management submits for council, whether they are allowed enough time to speak in the meetings, how is the CEO doing. We have to do a self-evaluation, and we are busy with that kind of tool that we are developing ourselves. Other organizations are using consultants. We have preferred to develop our own tool. where we'll ultimately summarize and give council feedback to say, this is how you view yourselves as council. I need to just respond to the issue of leakages. Where there are no leakages, Umaruzi does not have to get any accolades, because that is not our work. It is the work of the department with the provinces. So that I meet members of the public who says, well done, Umaruzi, there be no leakages. I don't want to get the credit that is not mine. The credit is with the department. What we do is, before the examinations are written, we do a countrywide state of readiness. And we check areas of strength, areas of weakness, and we are able to highlight those to the department to say, in the Free State, we observed that there is no camera. Just as an example, in the storage room, there are no cameras recording. So you better correct that before the commencement of the examination. The department will do that. And just before the examinations commence, we then go back on the areas that you have said they should improve on, to check whether they have improved on them or not. So the credit has to go to them where there are no leakages. Umaruzi does not feature in the daily chain. Same with the capacity of teachers. Like Faith is saying, the capacity of teachers is the responsibility of the employer. Umaruzi can only pronounce, once it is done, quality assurance, to say, we realize that their teachers cannot do school-based assessments. Their teachers can't assess. So it is for the department to go and train those teachers. We are doing oversight. And unfortunately, we do oversight, and if the department does not take remedial measures to correct issues that we raise, learners will fail. Learners will fail. So we don't water down our quality assurance to suit the system. Our quality assurance remains at the same level, whether the system has employed inefficient teachers or not, so that when a child gets a certificate, it should be a certificate that is credible. Honorable members, indeed, we have made the observation that our children can't express themselves. In 2014, when we had group copying, we participated in some of the investigations where we were observing. It is the department that investigates irregularities. So we're observing, and we realize that in some areas of our country, children who have written matric need an interpreter when they are questioned on certain issues. And we're very disappointed with that. So it still boils down to the question of provisioning, which is done by the department. We do quality assurance. Learners who can't express themselves in the language of learning and teaching will not pass. Will just not pass. Because the questions are not asked in Sesotho, they are not asked in IsiZulu, they are asked in English. So it is for the provider of education to ensure that learners can express themselves. In terms of our certification protocols and whether the results are released, I'm talking here in particular about Tumeleni, which was made as an example, depends on what the department says to us. If the department says there's been an irregularity at this center, we say to them, we are not going to release those results because there have been irregularities. Learners have been copying, they have a question too. So the department goes further to go and investigate, and once they are satisfied that the learners have been cleared, or only one learner was a culprit, only that learner's results will be blocked, not the rest of the center. So it depends on what the department reports to us. They've got irregularity committees in the provinces. They've got the National Irregularity Committee, where Umaruzi sits as an observer, and then they meet the Executive Committee of Council under Professor Bolming to submit that our results have been cleared here, but there have been problems here, and then we say, where there have been problems, and the system has been undermined, you can't release the results. The issue that I want to emphasize is clear role definition and clear role delineation between us and the department. Ours is oversight. The department is provisioning and also assessment. And then we check that everything has been done according to the standards. Indeed, Honorable Zwani, the TVET colleges are not having qualified people. The training of lecturers at TVET colleges in this country is lacking. They are using artisans who have not been trained in pedagogy. And that shows when we go and do our own assessment of the system. We can see that they can't assess because they've not been trained on how to ask questions. and so forth and so on. They don't know from the simple to the complex, from the known to the unknown. The principles that we know as teachers, they don't know those. They come from industry, they come and offer those. And this thing shows when we assess them. And we write a report for all assessment bodies, Department of Higher Education and Training, Department of Basic Education, IEB, Benchmark, Sakai. At the end of each examination, we give them a fully fledged report that says these have been your areas of strength, these have been your area of weakness, and these are the directives. You need to improve on these. And we expect them to give us a report by March to say, on the directives, this is what we are doing. They must give us a full plan to say, on the directives that you have given us, we have done the following remedial measures. Prof. Holming will comment on the issue of general moderation, whether we compromise quality or not. I want to speak also on the issue of the certification backlog in the Department of Higher Education and Training with the TVET colleges. This has been a very painful thing to us, because we realize that it damages the future of the students we have qualified. Some of them have become, you know, heads of families in the process, they've married, but they can't move on with their lives because certificates have not been issued. Now, in terms of the certification issuance protocols, Umalusi is not able to issue a certificate until an assessment board or the department has given us the data to say, here is our data. Once we get that data, we quality assure it. And once we see discrepancies in the data, we don't issue a certificate. In the case of the Department of Higher Education and Training, Council noted that the data that they had given us was unstable. Elena would be having a statement of results that says he has got 60% in a particular subject. When they submit the certification data, it will be 40%, or vice versa. So we said, no, go clean the data. We can't issue certificates, because if we issue certificates on unstable data, adulterated data, then the credibility of our certificates is going to be affected. What then happened is that we had a task team between Umalusi, CETA, and the Department of Higher Education and Training. They met every Monday, and they would report to the DG, the CEO of CETA, and myself on a monthly basis to clean up this mess. The mess has been cleaned out now. Whatever remains, it should be very small. But it was a battle of 3 to 4 years. It was terrible. We have to come to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training several times to come and account to Honorable Poussin and later to Honorable September. So the problem is something of the past now. Where there are still challenges, they should be very, very small. The verification of qualifications obtained before 1992, the protocols then were different. We did not have this high-tech kind of computers and so forth and so on. So the results of people like me who did their matric in 1980 are on microfiche. They are on microfiche, and you don't come to Umalusi if you want to verify, you go to the department. Then they have to go to those microfiche fillings, and they do that. SAQA and Umalusi is having a project now where we want to computerize and make all that data, all data electronic. And we look at the life expectancy of people in the country and say, did we start from 1900 or 1910? Because many people who have did matric in 1910 still want to look for jobs in the country. So the protocols are different. The protocols are different, unfortunately. It was only during the days of SAFSET that we now had new technology and things were working much better. On the question of evaluation of the curriculum, there are a lot of factors that come into the picture here, and I want to go slowly on it. Stella made a point, but it's not elaborate on a number of things. The first one is, unlike universities, if you look at the sub-framework of Council on Higher Education, it has many BAs, BA of Waltasi Sulu, BA of UCT, BA of Western Cape University, and so forth and so on. In our case, we've got very few qualifications. It's NSC, NCV, GTC, N courses, and amended senior degree. Very few. So we don't have to push ourselves to do two men in 1 year. We do two. And also that it takes 5 years for any curriculum to bear. So that we'll not do a research on curriculum now when it has been introduced recently. Like the CAPS curriculum was introduced by Minister Mucheka around 2013. It's only now that we can look at it. So we are under no pressure. It is the issue of the budget, the issue of the capacity. The only time when we are going to have more of these curriculum assessments would be when we are approached by Montessori, by Waldorf, by A School of Tomorrow to say, we've got our own curriculum from overseas. Can you assess it against your own curriculum? Because you don't have a lot of qualifications. Chairperson, I think I've covered all. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Chair, just very briefly, about the generosity of the adjustment. That is part of the process called standardization. So in fact, tomorrow we will be in Pretoria looking at the results of the supplementary test. So we will go through that process where we will approve that. I have to say that one has to take into account two factors. One has to distinguish between perception and reality. It's a lot of perception, a lot of that's created by people who do not want to recognize that we are making progress as a country. And I have to say the second point is that in a non-racist, non-sexist, democratic country, we have to expect that massification is a natural outcome. So there's a natural growth in the numbers. Across gender, across race. Thirdly, the national curriculum statement has been designed so that most people should be able to pass, not fail. All over the world, that is, in fact, an aspiration. Most people must pass. As far as the standardization process is concerned, let's just take the public exam, because as Dr. Akometsi has said, there are also other examination bodies. But let's take the public one, and we're only looking at schools. There are about 57, varies slightly from year to year, 57 to 59 subjects that we standardize every year. Of those, our aspiration is that we shouldn't meddle with them at all. So what When you write your exam, that the result that you get is in fact the raw score without any adjustment. Now we are succeeding in doing that. That most of the subjects, of the 50 odd subjects, are left as raw. You can check the record, it will prove that. Of those that we adjust, certainly last year, we can either adjust upwards or downwards. Most of the adjustments were done downwards, not upwards. So there is this misconception that that the process is to generate. Nothing can be further from the truth. So we are trying, ideally, as the system matures, we would like to say we won't do any adjustments. Then what we have is based on the strength of the examination. I have to just add that the issue of this perception has been fed by a few academics and a few people who are alienated, and it's impossible to defend oneself all the time. And the CEO has acted fiercely in trying to protect the image, and I do think that. It goes back to the Honourable Damini's question, and one of them is got to do with how do we know that we are making progress? Outside of a council evaluation, which I think Dr. Akometsi has referred to, the only thing that we can do is protect the public image of mothers, because it's got to do with credibility, and it's important that. And that's why I'm making this point. It's very important that the public trust the Umas as the arbiter and the auditor of quality. So we've been working very hard at our communication and our public image.
Thank you very much, Professor. The department, I think I'm going to allow you 1 minute each just to make a comment.
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Chair. I think all the questions were adequately covered by both the CEO and the Chairperson. I just wanted to confirm what the CEO has mentioned in terms of the certificates that you may be looking for, 1974 and 1990. The pre-92 records are being managed by the DBE. So your 1974 records are with us. And 1976. Okay. So if you can give me your details.
Same as here.
1976. Incidentally, you and I completed matric in the same year.
Mm.
So we can arrange for the honourable member as well to get a copy of your certificate. Incidentally, we have records from 1940 with us. Yeah, but like the CEO has mentioned, is a lot of these are in hard copy format, and they are in an extreme stage of degradation. But we've managed to salvage, and a number of the records are already digitized. But the accessing of those records electronically is still a problem, and that's the project that Sakwa, Umalusi, and the DB are currently working with. So we would be able to assist with your certificate.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to hear that. Do you want to comment?
Well, thanks, Chair. I can comment on the issue of the induction that was actually raised. That the department through the EMGD has got a program now of induction that is continuing to ensure that the new teachers and the HODs and the teachers that come into the system. That's a huge problem that has just been finalized, I think, for the principals it started about a year ago, but for all the other levels, it is actually coming to fruition, so that almost all the teachers that get into the profession get through a year's long of induction. That's the one part. Mm.
Thank you very much. We've come to the end of the meeting. On behalf of the committee, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you very much. Firstly, let me thank you, Professor Voynich, for having led the council and having exercised integrity, the dedication that you have shown, the hard work, the direction that you have given to the entity to ensure that you protect the quality of education of all South Africans. It is a mammoth task. The level of development of a nation is always just in terms of the quality of education that the nation or the country offers. And we really want to say thank you very much. We do hope that whoever is going to be coming in is going to take the baton and run and do better. But if you happen to come back, if ever, we are still going to retain you. We are going to be more than happy to continue to work with you. We really do appreciate your work. You put us in the map of South Africa, and we want to say that we are proud of the contribution that you've made, and we wish you happy retirement if you are retiring, but if you are coming back, we are going to be more than happy to continue to work with you. Thank you very much. Thank you. And thank you also for the responses. CEO, we are still remaining with us. We are not going anywhere. But I do want to encourage you to go on to the position. We are really trying very hard within the constraints that are facing in the country. Lack of finances, but you have to do the work nonetheless. Juggle around, even when the budgets are cut, we've got to ensure that we still maintain our targets, and we are going to hold you accountable for the targets that you set for yourself. Say,
Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you very much for the discussion. We still have a lot of work to do to turn around the teaching profession to be at the level it is supposed to be. We are going to support you all the way through, provided you apply, you take the directives of the committee, you work on the issues that we are raising at the committee. We are raising one critical issue that we are raising at the committee. The teaching profession, people have lost confidence in the teaching profession because of the manner in which teachers are conducting themselves and the lack of professionalism. That is the issue that is the bottom line. All these other issues of rape, of sexual harassment, of corporal punishment, flouting the laws of the country, center around the fact that the fraternity has lost professionalism. You said you are going to develop a model teacher. Develop it. Your expressions are, we are looking at, we are going to achieve that. We are achieving. Set time frames for yourself. Achieve it and come to us to support you as a committee. We are not fault-finding, but we raise issues if they are not done properly. And we do highlight issues we want to compliment you. So I want to say that you still have a lot of ground to cover. And we are going to be keeping track of your targets as well. And this is not the last interface with the parliamentary panel. Nonetheless, we are at the end of the term of parliament. The likelihood is that we are not going to be working with this committee anymore. New faces probably are going to be coming in to take over the basin from this committee. That will still be a committee of parliament that are going to take the basin from us and we move forward into our debate. And thank you for coming. Yes. And you were very empty. I can see the opinion that you were very empty to job who you were called to come. And you didn't answer me on the government subsidy. I received subsidy already, or you are still going to. You are. Okay. Use the money when you want to see the audit outcome, the voice of the auditor general, because we were instructed with public money. In your next presentation, budget presentation, we do want to see what the auditor general is saying about the future job. Thank you.